This is a podcast from Shooting People. Hello, this is Andy Conway and welcome to another Shooting Screenwriters podcast. This month I spotted that Chris Huntley, co-creator of Dramatica, a theory of story as well as a software program, was holidaying in the UK. So I grabbed the chance to set up a meeting with him at the Shooting People offices. We started off by talking about how it all began.
It began shortly after my business partner, my writing partner, and I all graduated from USC Cinema. And during my senior year, we made an independent movie, which was terrible. And the script was horrible. And that was the second script we had written, and it was horrible. We were about to write another script, and we kind of took pause and said, you know, really, this isn't working. We need to find some formulas that'll work really well, because we want to do action-adventure. So let's write a book. You know, about a subject we're really not doing well about. And we started to do it, and we came up with some really interesting ideas, just a couple basic ones. And then we hit a wall. And surprisingly enough, I said, you know, I'm not mature enough. I don't know enough about things to be able to take it beyond this. But it sure looks interesting.
Do you mean as a person or as a screenwriter?
As a person. Really? I mean, and I'll tell you, it's probably the only mature thing I've ever done in my life. Several people can probably vouch for that. And it turned out to be very true. My business partner is a screenwriter, and we had started our company shortly after this sort of aborted attempt at screenwriting. And we were writing software for screenwriting. Surprise, surprise. There really wasn't anything in 1982. So we came out with some software, and he was an actual working screenwriter. And every time he started a new script, he'd say, Chris, you know that book you were going to write? I could really use it right now. So that went on until 1990, and finally, whatever it was that I needed to start to work out hit me. I approached Melanie, my writing partner, and I said, you remember that stuff we were working on? I think it's a good time to pick that up. And it was just the right time for her, too. And so I think that gestation period of, you know, 9 years really was, you know, there's this unification of whatever, and we were just the perfect timing for both of us. And we sat down, and that was in August, and every morning before work, we'd have lots of caffeine, and a couple hours, we'd talk about, ask questions, never settling for partial answers. You know, like, if a character has a problem, why don't they solve it? How can they not solve it? And we actually started coming up with answers. And by January, we had a really big breakthrough. But as we got further and further into it, we got further and further away from story and more into psychology, which we even knew less than. So we were in a totally unqualified area. And that was the beginning of it, because at that point we realized we had something, and that was that stories are an analogy to a human mind solving a problem. Mm-hmm. That's what they are. It's almost as if it's a representation of that process.
That's the strange thing, is that you started out thinking we're going to write a screenwriting manual, like many of the ones we all know and love. What you ended up with is a kind of all-embracing theory of story.
Right. Yeah, it was completely... If someone told me I was going to end up doing that ahead of time, I'd tell them they were nuts. And I sure wouldn't have gone that direction. It took an awful lot of time and energy. And then once we kind of came down to the building blocks, it took us about 3 years to put it all together in a form that people could begin to understand. The very first version of Dramatica was extremely difficult to use. The language was very arcane. There's just an awful lot of terminology, and that hasn't really changed. But when you talk about story, there's so much that's abstract in story. And if one person says, oh, my character, blah, 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 and another person says, oh, your character, you may not even be talking about the same thing when you're referring to character or plot or theme or genre. Mm. And so part of what we did is we identified what are these things and all the different varieties and flavors and textures to them without even talking about the storytelling. So it's really looking at the underlying qualities of story that communicate the idea to the audience that an author uses that you then put into place with, you know, storytelling. And so it was real tough. And we're still working on. Trying to make it easier, trying to make it a little bit less dense, but the nice thing about it is that you can talk very specifically and make comments to another writer or another person who works with story in very specific terms, and they understand what you're saying, which is just so difficult otherwise.
I wrote an article about it, an online article several years ago, in which I described it as the DNA of story. And it does right. kind of feel that complex. Yeah,
well, that's actually, I think that's very close. I think that the patterns that our mind uses to see things in terms of DNA, Dramatica is very similar in terms of it mapping how we see things. And it's not, it literally isn't just a helix, it's a quad helix. It's four items, it's two strands intertwined. Mm. And that's that process that describes how we think. Now, one thing about Dramatica, it is different from other story paradigms in that the approach that we took looks at stories very objectively. For most people, except maybe journalists, that's a very strange way to look at fiction. Because, we're all authors and we're all audience members. But even if we're the authors, we tend to look at stories from the audience's point of view. What does this feel like? What does this mean? All those are the things you get while consuming the story. Kind of like when you're eating. If you have this cake or you have this wonderful meal and you're savoring the experience of the flavors and stuff. But then if someone turns around and says, okay, I want you to make something that has exactly the same feel of it but use different ingredients. Well, your mind suddenly begins to go into this different place. It's not thinking about color and textures necessarily. You're thinking of, okay, what are my ingredients? How do I prepare this? What are the tools that I use? And that difference, it's a completely different way of looking at the same process of eating, is the type of thing that happens in story. As a consumer, an audience is eating your story. It's consuming your story. And it's looking for meaning. It's trying to find out how things are flowing, how they feel. But when you're trying to put it all together, you're not looking for that. You're saying, okay, what goes next? How much of this do I use? How much do I withhold? What do I use? What don't I use? And so Dramatica, by approaching a story from that very objectified view, has a strange, strange feel to it. And I have yet to find somebody who, without experiencing Dramatica, understands what it is. They have lots of ideas of what they think it is. Some people think it'll write their story for them. Ha ha! Boy, if I had invented that thing, I'd be rich. I know a lot of writers or people in the entertainment industry who want to get rich quick would love a tool like that. I think anybody who's writing for themselves or because they're motivated to write understands that that's completely uninteresting because most people write to work out or exercise certain inequities or discover certain things about themselves, even if that's not directly what they think they're doing, that's really what they're doing. Because if that itch ever got scratched, pretty much the drive would go away. Now, other paradigms, they approach stories from here. I've seen X number of, hundreds or thousands of stories, and here's the patterns that we see in these genres and such. And from an audience reception point of view, they're very accurate. And the thing about it is as a writer, you go to these seminars and you listen to it, and you see those patterns, and you felt them even before they told them to you. So they feel right. The problem is when you want to go and then take that to use it to create. Because one of the things about our minds is, if there's a pattern that's missing something, we have to fill it in. We have no choice. Mm-hmm. So of course, when you have these paradigms that explain a way to approach story, the first thing we want to do is what about stories that are different? Your mind immediately goes to those things. Yeah. I want to tell something that's different than what everybody else tells. I don't want to tell the same thing everybody else has told me. And it falls apart. And that's why it gets very frustrating to write from those paradigms. Dramatica, on the other hand, you're frustrated right up front. No. because it's an awful lot of work. It doesn't make writing easier, but it does make it better. And it also prevents you from having to do 10, 20 rewrites, which some people are doing, because they're not trying to polish dialogue. They're usually trying to fix something that's fundamentally flawed. It takes care of those things right up front. But if you want to know how it's going to affect your audience, Dramatica is really not helpful in determining that. But as authors, that's what we do. That's the thing we bring to a story. We make the choices. In Dramatica, there's this concept of the story form. And the story form is this underlying structure and then the rules that guide how the structure flows and fits, which we call the dynamics. And in Dramatica, there are no wrong stories if they have a proper story form. However, as a writer, there may be tens of thousands of choices for me of story forms, but they're not all the ones I want to tell. How do I find the one that is right for me, that's going to scratch that itch that I'm trying to trying to get to. And that's what an author brings to any story. And usually, when you have authors, they tend to tell, a lot of them, they tend to explore the same area because they haven't worked out the issues. And, you know, the sad thing is that the greatest works of art and the greatest works of literature are usually by the most tortured people. So the ones who create these insightful, unusual pieces of art really can never enjoy it, or rarely can. And then there are the great technicians who, you know the patterns, they can do it really well, but there's, you know, frequently they don't have that drive. They're creating pieces of really entertaining work. And, you know, for every author, you have to find that balance. There's something romantic about the tortured, starving artist, but living it is never really much fun.
No. I guess you're kind of torn between other screenwriting paradigms. They do the job to an extent, as you say,
and they're
simple, and they will get you up and running. Whereas Dramatica is kind of much, much more detailed, much more rewarding in the end, but the learning curve is a lot
steeper.
Very steep, which is why a lot of people find Dramatica too complex, in a sense. We had a debate about different screenwriting paradigms on the list recently, and Dramatica was one of the ones that came up. Someone wrote in very glowing terms about it, and another shooter dismissed it as, oh, Dramatica's just a cult. So, and I guess it's the kind of the attention to detail that's needed and the dedication you have to put into it might make it seem like that.
Sure. I think that the advantage of Dramatica is that there are many, many tools that you can use as a writer, you can walk away with. And hopefully, in our discussion here, we'll be able to give a couple of those to the listeners that they can just go out and use it on their own story, never thinking about anything beyond that. The problem is that when you find out, ooh, this is really nice, this works, there was a problem there, but I didn't know what it was, and this puts a label and tells me what to do about it. When you've got one of those kinds of tools in your writing toolbox, you really start to want to look for more. And Dramatica has a gazillion of them. And that's where I think the comment about it being a cult is somewhat true, in the sense that you can become completely over-obsessed about it. And I'm constantly reminding people, look, Dramatica, it's a tool. You know, just because you have a hammer, not everything's a nail. You know, you don't want to go bashing on everything. There's always this little period of zealotry early on when you start seeing things that other people don't see in stories and explaining things that, this is what's wrong with it, see? This is how it fits. And you get really excited because it's something that's been right there in front of your friggin' face. You know, it's right there, but you can't see it. And suddenly it becomes very clear. And you go, wow! You know, you want to share it. And that's where you get that whole culty thing, you know, where anybody who moves into a different frame of reference, a paradigm, wants to share that. Especially if they feel it's a very positive thing.
Okay, now some of those techniques, I think that even a writer who's not read the Dramatica Theory book or really, really delved in software, there are some very kind of simple techniques right at the top end of Dramatica that make sense that you kind of use in your writing without really using the whole paradigm. And the one that really kind of hit me first was this idea of that you're not telling one story, you're actually telling four stories. And there are these four through lines. And one is the overall story that concerns...
The big picture.
The big picture, yeah. Everybody...
Usually people think of it as the plot. I mean, that's typically what people think of as the plot, but it's really just one of the perspectives in the story.
Then there's a main character through line. The other one is an impact character through line. And this is something that really transformed my writing when I took the idea of the impact character on. And the fourth one is the main character versus impact character through line. The argument that's going on throughout the
sort of a relationship between the two.
Yeah, yeah. Which is a separate story from their individual through lines.
Right.
And when I first started getting to grips with Dramatica, this whole idea of every story is about a main character who comes up against an impact character and they conflict in some way or clash. And by the end of it, one of them will change. It could be the main character, it could be the impact character. Mm-hmm.
And one will remain steadfast.
Yes, exactly. I found that incredibly powerful as a tool. So there are those four through lines that you see in every story. But they don't take place in a vacuum. They take place within four very specific domains as well. And that's where it kind of gets a little bit more complicated in that.
Sure. Well, let me, if you don't mind, let me put those four perspectives, I think, in a frame of a reference that everybody can understand.
Uh-huh.
one of the things that happens in Dramatica, Dramatica is about problem solving. It's about people solving problems. Well, in our own lives, we can solve problems and see problems in a number of different contexts. Mm. One is our own life. What if, for us, what if we have a problem or we are the problem? We understand that. That's one thing. That's one place for us to look to try to solve things. Then, and that's the main character, the character, sort of that perspective of you are in the story. So that's one of the through lines. Then there is the other person, yeah. The you perspective. Right. You know, you say this, well, I think that. Well, that's where the impact character comes in, and it's that alternative perspective to the main character, which is, in some regards, very, very similar to the main character, but then also offers something different. So there's a bit of truth, and frankly, maybe they're right. So that's mm-hmm. that alternative you perspective. And then there's the, okay, well, what's going on between us? Because what's important to me and what you're doing is completely different than what's going on with us. And in a relationship, it need not be a romantic. It could be familial. It could be any kind of relationship. Business, fun, you know, interviewer, interviewee. You know, that all of that, there is a relationship. And when the problem occurs and you're trying to find out what's going wrong, then you can look at that relationship independent of the people who are in it. But then there's a larger context, the big picture, they perspective. And in our own lives, with our own problems, we can never get that big perspective. We can't stand outside of ourselves and see objectively how we fit into the story. So we know what it's like to have a problem, the main character perspective. We know what to have somebody else have an alternative perspective for us, offer that alternative perspective to someone else. We know what it's like to be in a relationship, so we experience those firsthand. But that big picture one, we don't really get firsthand. Mm-hmm. We kind of have to approximate it. Now, if we're talking about somebody else, I have no problem standing outside and seeing exactly what's going on in your life and seeing how you fit in and seeing what the problem is. So we can be very objective about that. That they perspective is quite familiar. We can be in a relationship with that person. We can be that other voice, the you perspective to them, but we can never stand in their shoes. So in real life, in everyday problem solving, we never get the full picture. We get 3/4 of what's available to us. The thing that makes a Dramatica-type story, we call a grand argument story, compelling, is that it provides all 4 perspectives within a single context. So you actually get more than you do in real life. And that's one of the reasons you can watch a story over and over and over after the storytelling is all boring and you've seen it a billion times. But it still gives you that thrill when a certain moment happens. So those 4 through lines are essential to creating a single story. We call them the overall story, but it's really just a thread that goes through. It's a perspective. And, you know, in different kinds of stories, they emphasize the different threads. Now, for instance, if you're talking about a romantic comedy, the emphasis is usually on the relationship through line. That's the part that people are most interested in. Now, you need to have a big picture. You know, in Gone with the Wind, you know, you've got Rhett and Scarlett, or Scarlett's the main character, Rhett's the impact character. We see both of them. We see a lot about them. It's their passionate on-again, off-again relationship that seems to be the greatest emotional emphasis in the story. But then again, you've got the big picture. You've got, you know, the Civil War. So you've got all 4 through lines, and they're all related because all of it makes the argument, not any single part of it. Mm. Now, even if you just think of your stories just having those 4 through lines, you're so much way ahead of the game, particularly in films. If it's not working, it's generally because they're missing either the impact character and or the relationship through line. Your main character's got a problem. Without somebody forcing him, he is not going to change. He hasn't changed up to that point. So why should he change now? The impact character forces that main character to grow. And there's a bit of a difference between growth and change. If a character has a problem, why don't they solve it? They don't solve it because they cannot see it. It is invisible to them. They don't know that there is a choice there. And how can they not? They think it's something else. They're convinced it's something else. If you walked up to Hamlet and said, "Hamlet, what's your problem?" He's not going to tell you what his problem is. Mm-hmm. He's going to tell you it's something completely different. You know, I'm sure we all know somebody who's had a problem, and we've been on the outside, and we've said to them, "You know, here's your problem. Here's what you do to solve it." And in fact, that was their problem, and that would have solved their problem for them. All their angst. How often do they go, "Oh, yeah, you're right. Okay. Oh, okay, I feel so much better"? Never. Because in order to get to that severe of a state, they have gone through these stages to build up blinders to the point where they cannot see it. It is at a black hole. And the growth process is the part that gets them to the point, either tears down those walls so they suddenly see, oh, wait, now there's a choice. There's the one I thought it was, which is where the main character has been, or there's the one that the impact character is promoting. Now I have to figure out which one do I go with, the one that I've been very familiar with, or I have this one that's very unfamiliar but seems to have the potential of actually being maybe a little better. And that's when they are changed over the course of the story or driven to become steadfast over the course of the story. But the point is that at some point, then they can get to that point where they can change or remain steadfast. And in order to do so, they do need that growth. That's one another area where dramatic is a little bit different than the other paradigms. The other paradigms don't make that distinction. So because they don't make that distinction, they really don't know how to handle a steadfast character. Because by its very nature, a steadfast character doesn't change. But characters need to change.
All characters need to change. That's the dogma, isn't it?
Right. And it's true, because you can grow in your steadfastness. Dr. Richard Kimball in the Fugitive, he didn't go out, okay, I'm going to be breaking the law and doing all this stuff no matter what and try to kill somebody or go jump off buildings and stuff. He didn't start there. Remember, he started off and he was being very helpful, and you know that's what got him into the whole mess. And the pounding and pounding and pounding, he built up his resolve to really an amazing level, almost a breaking point. And it was so strong that it forced Gerard, who's the FBI retrieval guy, to change. Somebody who didn't care whether or not he was innocent, and at the end, he did care. So understanding there are four through lines is really helpful. And as you point out, though, they're not in a void. You have to put them into a context to make sense. And what we do in Dramatica, there are four different areas we can find problems. So the four areas in Dramatica that you can place your through lines is a situation.
Situation, yeah.
Activities. So you have a problematic activity. The internal static equivalent to situation is fixed attitude or fixation, bias, prejudice. We've got lots of names for that in our culture. And then you also have manipulation or psychological problems.
Mm. Ways of thinking.
Ways of thinking, exactly. Not what you think, but how you think.
Yeah.
What you think is a fixed attitude. How you think is the manipulation one. So what you do is you assign the perspectives, one perspective for each of these domains. We call them domains. And that gives you the greatest genre feel of a story. So, for instance, if you're telling the story in a comedic fashion, you'd have a situation comedy. And that's what it is. It's people are stuck, and we're telling it in a humorous fashion. Ha ha ha, that's a situation comedy. You look over in the activity area, that's where you get physical comedy. You get the fixed attitude in comedy. You get the comedy of manners. And then in the comedy in psychology, we call it a comedy of errors. And you have a lot of those in Shakespeare, where mistaken identity, somebody dresses up and looks like somebody else, and so they have all these, oh, it's so funny, he thinks she's a guy, and he feels attracted to her, but it's really a woman, and you know, from Twelfth Night, that kind of stuff. But what the thing is, since all four domains occur in every story, if you had a straight-out comedy, it'll be part situation comedy, part physical comedy, part comedy of errors, and part comedy of manners. So you get all of those elements. But you can also say, I don't want a straight-out comedy. I don't want everything to be funny. I want parts of it to be somewhat serious. Mm-hmm. One of the films that we had analyzed recently was Notting Hill. And it is a romantic comedy. So it's the romantic part that would emphasize the relationship through a line. The comedy seems to come most from either Hugh Grant or the relationship. And the relationship is more, the spilling on things and, you know, the oops and all this stuff. So you'd have probably put that in the activities. You'd have the relationship through line in the activities domain. And we see that the overall story then is going to be in a comedy of errors. You see that particularly in the scene when they go to the friend's house for the birthday party. And, you know, the ones that, isn't it funny he doesn't recognize that she's this big star? Or isn't it funny, that especially the scene where they're sitting around the table trying to do the woe is me thing, you know? And the humor comes from, okay, it's funny and it's sort of serious, but of course, you know, it's all over but trying to get the last brownie. So all of the characters use manipulation in a kind way, and yet it sort of arrests the development of the main character, and it's sort of problematic. And he himself manipulates himself to not act and such. And in fact, you've got Anna's boyfriend also, you know, the comedy of errors. He mistakes him for a bellboy or whatever, you know.
Room service,
Room service, exactly. So, I mean, and that's funny. And it's uncomfortable. And then you've got our main character, whose biggest problem is not a physical problem. He's obviously got the equipment. He's good looking. He's single. You know, all the physical things seem to be working, but he's got this really bad attitude. You know, that's the thing. Nobody's either good enough for him or he's not good enough for them. Certainly when it comes to Anna, he feels like he's completely out of her league. You know, so he's got this really fixed attitude, like, she couldn't possibly be interested in me. And that keeps on holding him back. Whereas she's this person who's defined by her status in the world. You know, she's this beautiful woman whose face is everywhere. Everybody knows her. Nobody knows who she really is, though. That she's just a girl asking a boy if he will love her. That's where she's has a problem, because she really is just a girl. She also happens to be have a job that's very popular and very public, but she's just a girl. And so that's the thing that has the effect on him. That part of her is the thing that has the effect on him. But also, the persona in the real world also has that. That sort of feeds into his, I'm not good enough, but she's also just a girl, which is the thing that forces him to grow and forces him to actually finally be able to go take that step and be proactive, because he's so not proactive.
And he has to kind of realize, I mean, she says that the fame thing is not real.
Right, absolutely. Well, again, he's all about attitude. He's all about, this is what people think, and that's therefore what they think is most important. You know, being a fixed attitude character, he is locked in this way of seeing the world.
And she's trapped in that situation of how the world views her.
Right, and that's not going to change. Yeah. She can't change that because it's not of her doing. Mm. But the thing is that the way that she influences him is she lets him understand that this is not me. So in order to be with me, you can be with me, and everybody else can be looking at something else. It's not going to go away. And you see at the end of the film, you know, he has decided to essentially join her in her world, where, you know, they're going up the red carpet, but they're also enjoying the part where she's just a girl and a guy when they're on the park bench. Yeah. When, remember, they jumped over the fence and they were talking about that bench was just this couple, that was this one very important personal relationship that created this bench, and that's where you see them, you know. Mm-hmm. So now they're both. They have the public persona, but they also have that very close two people, not a movie star and the movie star's husband.
We're talking about the top level of dramatic drama.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It gets deeper and deeper and ever more complex the deeper you go.
Yes.
And kind of works on the levels of these four different levels, isn't it? The genre,
right,
plot.
Right, genre, plot, theme, and then character.
Yeah.
One of the things that probably makes Dramatica... There are two things that make Dramatica so completely different, I would say. They're fundamentally different. That character, theme, plot, and genre are all interconnected. You cannot separate them. That if you make a story choice that is not just an arbitrary thing, but actually has to do with the meaning of the story, it affects everything. And how those things are related and how you control them, that's usually when people spend all the time because something's broken. That's where it is. The other thing about Dramatica, and this nothing else can do, is that it can tell you things about your story that you didn't tell it. You can answer certain questions, story-forming questions about your story, about the things you do know, and then it will make suggestions for the rest of it to support those things that you've identified. Now, usually if a writer has a problem, it's in an area that they don't think about, or they don't know about, or they're conflicted. Mm. So if you answer, based on your own priorities, this is really important to me, and this I know for sure in this story, and this I know, and blah, blah, blah. Then all of the other things that Dramatica can do will work to support that. And it's a really cool, weird moment when you first start answering the questions, and then it gives you back other stuff about your story that you knew, but how did it know? That's when you get one of those, you know, the willies, you know, what's going on here? There's something more, there's something bigger.
Now, Dramatica is kind of branching out into many, many different areas of activity at the moment. There's a daily blog. You have your workshops every month and a podcast. And one of the most recent interesting ones I really enjoyed was the Dramatica for Screenwriters book by Armando Saldaña Mora.
Right.
Who is a devotee of Dramatica. He learned it just like everybody else and used it professionally. And eventually became one of, I think, the foremost people developing ideas of how to use Dramatica.
Absolutely. Because he's a working writer, especially in Mexican television, mm-hmm. which where he was at the moment when he was started using it, and also did some films. But Mexican TV is very, well, like any TV, it's a very short period of time to develop. You need to go mm-hmm. boom, 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 boom. And he took to it like water. I love reading Armando's stuff because I get these things back that I know I would never have approached story that way or used Dramatica in that way. And it's really exciting because, like, cool. You know, yep, that's very, that works. Uh-huh. And it's new to me. And he's actually going to be doing some workshops this month and the next 2 months in Los Angeles on using some of this stuff from his book. And one of them is, I have a little bit of I have a script that's too short, how do I beef it up? And the other one is, I have a script that's way too long, how do I trim it down?
Okay.
Using the Dramatica concepts to do that. Yeah, he's fantastic. The other person that you were talking about, the Dramatica blog, is not by me, although I'd love to have written it, but it's been by another Dramatica user by the name of Jim Hull. He's professionally an animator. He works at DreamWorks right now, I think. Mm-hmm. But he's worked at Disney and such. And his blogs have been great. They're really terrific. And even though I'll have a discussion with him, and then I'll see the fruits of our discussion in his blogs, he says it in a way that I find very presentable, very easy to understand. Mm. Not like my writing. My writing tends to be really dry. I strive for accuracy, which is not necessarily an entertaining quality. So, yeah, we also, you know, we're constantly working on, we have a new version that's not going to be coming out anytime soon. We have,
Dramatica 5, isn't it?
Yeah, Dramatica 5. And it's got we've got a slew of fantastic proposed ideas. The current version of Dramatica is quite old, technologically speaking.
Yeah.
We've not had any compatibility issues. It's just, it works like a charm because it's very simple. We want to try to bring it up to either current or probably beyond the current specs. And that how we have to do that is we've got a number of different ways to approach it. And then also part of that is how to integrate it better into our other products. One of them being StoryView, which is an outlining tool, as well as a tool where you can see the story along a timeline. That is a natural fit. In fact, it was originally designed going to be part of Dramatica.
Oh, right.
That was our original idea, was this is just going to be a feature of Dramatica. And then we thought, wow, this is a really big feature. Let's make a whole product. But I think it would really do well to be integrated much more tightly into Dramatica. Because right now, the biggest weakness, in my opinion, in the Dramatica software is the linear element of it. Most of it talks about how things are related spatially, how this is related to that, you know, the different through lines related to each other, etc. But how it plays out along a timeline is we have the plot progression window, and that's about it. So this would not only give you a way to tie the plot progression to a story form, but also then just to, you know, start doing your story weaving, start rearranging things so that you can show it in the order in which you're presenting it to your audience. Things like that. So that's one of the big things that we want to do. The other one is that I'd love to have the query system designable by the end user. So you've got questions you always ask yourself about your own stories that you could just create a topic and it'll be there. Or you don't like the order in which they're presented, you just rearrange them. Or you're using a different language, rewrite it. You know, those two things are really the big changes that I think we don't want to do. There's tons of little changes, but so many of them are dependent on how those kinds of things work in the current version. And if we change that, I think we'll be able to do a lot more, including incorporate Armando's book.
For those people listening to this who've not really delved into Dramatica and kind of are thinking of dipping their toes into the water, where would you suggest they go first?
Probably the first thing to do would be to go to Dramatica.com. If you just really want to get a little bit of a sense, look at some of the story analyses. The earlier version of the Dramatica Theory book is online. It's free. You can download it or you can read it online. That's a good place to start. It may be a little... Don't try to do the whole thing. No. Trust me. you know, you could. We kind of started off with the doctoral level version, and we're now down to probably the college level version, and we're trying to work down to the kindergarten version, but that's a long ways off.
I really like the comic book, actually.
Yes, well, that was the comic book was, again, done by a Dramatica user who also was working for us at the time, Mark Haslett, and also my business partner, Stephen. He and Mark wrote it, and then Mark illustrated it. It's a great primer, and that's also, you can download that, too, or look at it online. Then we have a sort of a lightweight version of Dramatica called the Writer's Dream Kit, and it is designed for people who are new to Dramatica and or new to writing. You don't have to be new to writing, but it's definitely, if you're new to Dramatica, it's a good way to go about starting off, and it's pretty inexpensive. The alternative is, if you get Dramatica Pro, it's just, we have the story guide, which is sort of a hand-holding, go through the process of writing a story. And in Dramatica Pro, there are three levels. In Writer's Dream Kit, it's just the first of those three levels. Okay. That's all it is. And the nice thing is that if you run through that, or even download the demo, go through the story guide. Level one, make up a story or pick a fairy tale. Do not work on something that you're trying to fix, that has story problems that you're trying to fix. Yeah. Try to fix your story problems and learn Dramatic at the same time. Bad combo. Especially the first time through. So go through that and don't spend any more than 3 minutes on a topic. The idea is to go through the process, not to achieve a particular result, because if you're new to Dramatica, you really don't know what it is. You really don't. Going through the process once will give you a good idea of what it is and how different it is than anything you were really thinking. The kinds of questions it asks aren't questions you generally think about. You know, what kind of problem solving your main character uses. When was the last time you asked yourself that if you weren't using Dramatica? Probably never. But it's really important because it determines how the story progresses, the order of events. Again, character intertwined with plot and theme and genre. So, answering those things, going through, do not spend any more than 3 minutes. If it's a fill-in-the-blank and you can't think of anything, leave it blank. If it's a multiple-choice question and you don't know which one you want, pick one. Just pick one. Because one of the things, as you start to go along, it'll seem kind of arbitrary and silly. But as you start to do it, surprisingly and almost magically, it starts to become a real story. No matter how stupid a topic you pick, or dumb characters or whatnot, you can pick the most ridiculous stuff, but then as you start to develop it, it becomes a real story with real emotion and real, compelling plot. And it's very, very interesting to go through that process because it's really one of those things that is very convincing in terms of, wow, this is something I can use to really develop something of meaning and of worth, not just plug out a story and, get something out. So that's what I would recommend. I've found that people who've done that have been very satisfied and have been much less frustrated by it. The second thing to do would be to take something you've already done that maybe has some problems, or just something you've already done, which actually might be better, where you think works pretty well, and then go through the same process and you'll may suddenly, find some things out about your story that you really didn't think about, and might find that there are some things you might want to punch up or punch down, Then if you've got a story that you're working on, the third try is the one I would say now is an opportunity to do that, because Dramatica won't get in your way as much. I know a lot of people become slaves to it, and that's when I tell them, don't do that. Mm. You're a writer. I mean, obviously, if you're trying to avoid writing, it's a great way to do that. But as a piece of software, you can turn it off. Mm. It's not a dictator. It might be rigid, but your use of it should not be.
I know I use it on certain projects and not on others, and I kind of think, why do I do that? And what I know now is that the ones I don't use it on are the ones that already kind of feel whole and complete, and I kind of don't want to...
Don't futz with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
It's working, don't...
Yeah, if it's not broken, don't fix it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's... Well, Dramatica, really, the best thing I could say is it mimics a writer's intuition of story. It's like a model of that. And one of the things about writer's intuition that is a really powerful and strong and positive thing is that it's organic. And you don't need to be overly analytical about it if it works. When it doesn't work, then you need to put on your thinking cap, and that's when Dramatica is very, very helpful. Mm-hmm. Because it's objective.
Yeah. And it's a tool, it's not a creator.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Now, I know what the listeners are thinking right now, and that is, who are the professional people who are using Dramatica to create award-winning screenplays or successful screenplays? Or, you know, is it kind of like Story Viagra, where it's very, very effective, but, you know, not everybody kind of wants to admit to using it?
Actually, that's a really good analogy. I'm going to borrow that in the future. I think my business partner will like that one, too.
Story Viagra.
It is a lot like Story Viagra. And, Debbie, we do have some people who are well-known who've written, and Wes Craven is a big proponent of
it. He used it, yeah.
Yeah. And there's an author by the name of Tracy Hickman who did all the Dragonlance, all these Dungeons and Dragons types of books. He uses it religiously. He's actually created a story development program, as in you go there and they work with you type of program.
Okay, yeah.
Not software program. Using it for creating adventure type stories.
Mm.
And it's... That was another one that was a very interesting interpretation of the Dramatica theory. I know there are a lot more. None of them are coming to mind. Some of them I know I can't talk about because they haven't allowed us to, so
yeah.
We don't. Oh, another one who really highly recommended it in public was, is it Michael Straczynski, who did the Babylon 5 series? I guess there was a panel and he was talking it up. Not too long after we had Dramatica, it was out about 4 years. I watched this film and I knew for a fact that someone had Dramatica that worked on it. And that was Contact, which, if you've ever read the book is a lot different than the movie. And the movie, I mean, there's a whole character that essentially is added, the Matthew McConaughey character, who's the impact character in that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was added after, I mean, that had a whole bunch of writers on it. And one of the latter writers is a Dramatica user, and he fixed it. Now, I'm not saying it's a perfect story. I mean, I like it, but it's not... It was just one of those things where I watched it and it was like, it was just too dead on. Another one, there was an episode of The X-Files where I watched it and went, that was about a writer who created this character from when they wrote that would this murderer would have to come to life. And I watched that, and it's like, not only did I know that it was written Dramatica by watching it, they even had one of the Dramatica reports on the wall.
Right.
And I was like... Wait, I saw that, you know, I mean, they were index cards, but they were laid out like the four through lines.
Mm.
And I went, that looks very suspicious. And I said, okay, if this is Act 1, then this is what Act 2 is going to be. And it was. I was like, okay. I was able to predict the nature of what was going to happen, but not what was going to happen.
Mm.
So the subject context, but not actually how it was going to work out. So that was really interesting. But for the most part, even, you know, when I watch movies, I don't think about, I'm not analyzing them all the time, unless it's broken.
Mm.
Then if you pop out of the story, you're no longer into it, then, you know, suddenly your mind goes, well, what's going on here? Why isn't that working, you know?
Thank you very, very much for taking time out of your holiday.
Absolutely.
This
has been great.
And I'd just like to, you know, recommend all our listeners to go to Dramatica.com. There's just tons and tons of things there to have a look at, and the podcast as well, that can all be downloaded.
Yep.
Including Armando doing one.
His book. It's a pre-edited version, so it's not the same as the printed version. Most of the material is there. I think there's one chapter, which is sort of the last chapter, which is much more about finishing the script, and that is not up there. But all the rest is there available. And if you don't mind me putting a little plug in,
of course.
Our other website is screenplay.com.
Screenplay.com.
Right. My company is called Wright Brothers, and that's we have a whole series of writing tools, including Movie Magic Screenwriter, and that has the Dramatica material, I mean, has some information about the Dramatica software, as well as all of our other products,
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So that's the end of another Shooting Screenwriters podcast. A big thank you to Chris Huntley for taking time out of his holiday to talk to me, and everyone at Shooters for accommodating us. And once again, to shooter Dan Squire, who rescued the audio file after I'd accidentally deleted it. If you enjoyed this podcast or want to talk about it, then drop an email into the Screenwriters Network bulletin. We're always glad to hear from you. Until next time, thanks again for listening.